Live from legendary Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee. Just two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song, it's Scott and Hino and the Music Row Show.
Yes.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. Hey, we got a big hour for you. Make sure and call up with questions. Our numbers are 737-WLAC.
1-800-688-WLAC.
Or star WLAC on your Verizon Wireless. And you can also email questions into mail@themusicrowshow.com.
That's right.
Hino, what do we got going on this hour?
We have an exciting hour. We got Rivers Rutherford with us tonight. I am so thrilled to welcome him to the Music Row Show. If y'all out there don't happen to know his name, you most certainly know his music. He's written some of the great country hits over the last 18 years. Songs like American Remains or Ain't Nothing About You, Homewrecker, If You Ever Stop Loving Me, When I Get to Where I'm Going, Shut Up and Drive, She Don't Tell Me To, Smoke Rings in the Dark, When the Lights Go Down, Real Good Man, and, you know, so many others. I could probably take up the rest of the hour just listing them off. So.
Well, I wish that was true.
Yeah, well, it is true.
You know what? I'll put money. Let's do it.
Thanks a lot. Well, in addition to being a monster writer, Rivers is one heck of a performer and guitar player. And if you ever get the chance to see him live, run, don't walk, and get your tickets to go see him. So, Rivers, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thanks, Hino. I appreciate that.
Hurrah, hurrah.
Yeehaw.
Well,
that's it. Start talking. We're going to go.
We're going to go fill up our drinks now.
I got a pocket full of jokes I could tell.
That'd be great. That would be great. You know, I'll start out with this. My favorite Nashville story of all time is Christofferson landing a helicopter on Johnny Cash's lawn to get him to listen to Sunday Morning Coming Down, which is one of my all-time favorite songs anyway.
Oh, man, no kidding.
But my second favorite story is you jumping Chips Moman's fence to play him a song with guard dogs and squad cars. Tell us a little bit about that, would you please?
Oh, man, you know, that was actually before I heard the Kris Kristofferson story. And I had called Chips and told him I had a song that I wanted him to hear. He said, oh, man, come by and play it for me. And I was living in Oxford, Mississippi at the time. Mm-hmm. So I got in my car and I drove to Memphis. He was living in Memphis, and he had some acreage there and a house way up on a hill, you know, and a big fence around the property. And I drove up and I rang the little buzzer at the gate, and nobody opened the gate. And I could see lights on at the house and people walking around. So I rang it again. Nobody answered. And I honked my horn a few times. And I got out and I'm waving my arms, you know, jumping up and down. Nobody's responding. So I said, well, shoot, I guess I'll go back to Oxford. And I pulled my car back and started down the street there, and I said, you know, dadgummit, I drove an hour and a half. He told me to come play him a song, and this is a hit. So I pulled up on the sidewalk, parked it, and I jumped over the fence, and the man, the alarms went off, and he had this big German Shepherd who turned out to be an absolute baby doll, you know. But her name was Maggie, and Maggie was not too happy about somebody jumping the fence.
Sure.
And came down, and I like to tell the story that he had all these oak trees in his yard, and the lowest branches were probably 10, 12 feet off the ground, and I made it.
You reached them, huh?
I did. I jumped in the squad cars and all that came. Anyway, he laughed about it, and he let me in, play him a song. I will tell all aspiring songwriters that, you know, that's not a good idea. Had I not had a song that he just happened to be looking for, it was perfect timing. It was truly one of those divinely ordained moments, I think. I had exactly the song that he was looking for at the moment. And not even that it was a great song. It was just exactly what he was looking for.
Right.
And he didn't send me away with the police. So.
And that song was?
American Remains, yeah. All actually, right. Oddly enough, Christofferson was one of the singers on the song.
That's what I thought was perfect there.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. So was that your entry into the music business, or
that was the thing that kind of gave me hope, if nothing else. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would not be in the music business if it weren't for Chips Moman and his wife Toni Wine. There's no question, ex-wife. But that was kind of my introduction to it. And you know, I was 21 years old. It was the first song I had recorded. I walked into a Emerald Studio just down the street from where we sit today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's Willie and Waylon and Johnny Cash and Kris Kristofferson, and Glenn Campbell had a guitar and he was playing a Jimmy Webb song for those guys. And I thought, well, you know, I'm in the record business and this is the way it works. And it turns out it was the first experience of my career, and it was the highlight of my career.
Wow.
All at one time.
Coming downhill from there. Huh?
No, that's not true. I've had a great time in the record business, yeah. but that was a big one, and I was too young to appreciate it, I think.
Well, that was your first cut then. What I've heard you say before, that there was quite a gap between the first cut and the next cut. Why don't you walk us through that story? How did that go?
Well, that would have been 1989. I guess the record came out in 90.
Uh-huh.
And I got married and had two children before I had another cut. It was 8 years, I think.
Wow.
I stayed in Memphis for a while and got married. We moved up here and just kind of put our nose to the grindstone, working odd jobs, doing whatever we had to make a living. But in 97, Shelley Wright cut Shut Up and Drive.
Mm-hmm.
I turned 30 in 97. I guess I'm aging myself now. I'm 40 this year. But on my 30th birthday, Shelley was playing Shut Up and Drive at Fanfare, what is now the CMA Music Fest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But so I went out, and I was depressed. I was 30 years old, had absolutely nothing going on, but I had a cut on this girl that had never had a hit before. It was hanging all my hopes on that, you know, and I went out and I watched her play it, and I said, my gosh, I think that's going to be a hit.
Hmm.
And it did. It wasn't a smash, but it was an impact record, and it got me a little bit of attention in town, and it was good for Shelley, and it was good for me, and I made a little bit of money, and I was able to kind of stay in there for a little while.
What were you doing all those years while you were just hanging on?
I did everything, man. I mean, I worked in a plant nursery out in Nolensville called Tance Plants for a while, and I did some jingles for a while. I worked as an MC for a very small beauty pageant franchise called the, what was it called? The Sunburst, Sunshine Beauty, something. I forget what it was. But I MC'd that for one weekend. But I discovered it really wasn't very good. A good friend named Houston Robear, who I wrote Smoke Rings in the Dark with. And by the time I did the fourth pageant here in Middle Tennessee, I got up and I said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 95, 96, something like that, Sunburst Beauty Pageant here in Middle Tennessee, and I want to introduce myself to you as your MC. My name is Houston Robear, and I'll be with you for the rest of the evening. I didn't want to be affiliated with it. $100 a pageant.
Well, what was the point where what job were you doing when the realization finally came? Hey, I can make a living at this, and I can quit doing this, and I can be a full time songwriter now. What was that job you were able to give up? And just how was that moment for you?
What I was able to give up?
Yeah, what were you doing when the day came that you said, you know what, I don't have to do this anymore. I can just go be involved in music.
Yeah, there's several. I mean, you know, there's plateaus in the music business. You that first publishing deal where they paid me, I think it was $20,000 a year to write songs. And of course, we had two children and a house note and had a wife. And it was you know, wasn't enough to live on, so I had to do several things. But I could quit the plant nursery. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to work that anymore, and that was good. But I kept doing jingles, and I did session guitar work for a while, which I loved doing, and I missed doing very much, actually. But I remember after I had Ain't Nothing About You, it was the first number one record that I had, and Brown Bannister called me to play on an Amy Grant record. I was in the shower, actually, thinking to myself, God, thank you that I'm not going to play on somebody else's song today, afraid that I'm going to wind up stealing it later. Thank you that I'm going in to write my own songs today. And the phone rang. It was Brown. Hey, you want to come play on this Amy Grant record? And, of course, that's a master deal, and Amy's a big artist and all that and wonderful person. I love that crew of people. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll be there. And I hung up the phone. It was like almighty God just kind of, didn't we just have this conversation?
Right.
You know. So I called him back. And I said, Brown, I don't do that anymore. And that was it. I was a songwriter officially at that point.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I was actually wondering that had to be a lot of added pressure, you know, being a parent and a husband and coming here in your 30s. I'm a parent, I'm a husband, and we're both, you know, just out there shucking songs around. It's like, oh, you know, that's added pressure when I see the 20-year-olds coming in, you know.
Sure.
It's just a whole different ball of wax when
Absolutely. You'd like to escort them to the bus station and show them the first one out of town, those young flat bellies, I guarantee it. They intimidate me for sure. There's so much talent in Nashville. It's you know, I wish I could tell you that I'm, you know, more talented, or that Jeffrey Steele or Brett James or Craig Wiseman or DePiro or Shapiro or any of those guys, that we're just better. But, you know, there's so much that goes into it in terms of getting a break and getting a fan on the business end of things, a champion, if you will, somebody that'll fight your battle for you, you know, so that you can focus on writing songs. And and I've been very fortunate. I found two or three of those in my career that have really fought for me and allowed me to go back and write.
That's excellent.
Well, you were almost a lawyer, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I wasn't a lawyer, but I came close. That was a, that was strange. Right when I was thinking about marrying my wife, I was 24 years old, and I was accepted into law school down in Memphis. And the week that law school started, about 3 days before school started, Chip Smoman called me, moved to Nashville. And he said, "Man, I got your last tape, and your songs are not happening. Mm. You need to move to Nashville, and you can live on my farm, and I'll give you that old farm Jeep up there and $1,000 a month, and you can live in my bunkhouse." Of course, this bunkhouse had two grand pianos, and it looked out over a pasture with two ponds and a barn. It was beautiful, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd like a bunkhouse like that.
Man, I wanted to do that, but he wasn't in the place where I needed to do that at the time, and I wasn't either, and I stayed in Memphis. But I woke up when law school started. I figured, well, that's what I'm going to do. And I got up, and I just had a cold chill run down my spine walking out the door, and I said, "All right, God, you got to give me something else to do because this ain't it. I know that much." So I didn't go.
Wow.
My father-in-law was really pleased with
that. I was just going to say, that must have been a big hit with the folks, you know?
Oh, man. No doubt.
Well, let's go ahead and take this call. Who do we have on?
We've got Bobby out in Hendersonville. Bobby, welcome to the Music Row Show.
I appreciate that so much, and I'm enjoying it very much here in our studio here in Hendersonville. And I am an independent country music radio disc jockey, and I've just got a question here. There's a lot of folks I've been telling about the show, and a lot of great songwriters and great country singers and great, gospel songs as well. How can we get, independent country, independent gospel, and, all the folks that's listening, how can we get their music heard on 50,000 watt or 100,000 watt radio stations, which are not being heard because of major record labels, right?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bobby. I tell you, and it's a tough one. I mean, and frankly, I've had several hits in my career, and I'm still trying to figure out how to get my songs on 50,000 watt radio stations. You know,
well, I do 6 days a week. I do a syndicated radio show, and with this show here on WLAC, a talk show, I believe this kind of music deserves, as far as the music side of it, should be able to break the barrier here in Nashville. Due to the fact there's a lot of great independent country artists that isn't being heard.
Well, that's a good point. I remember moving to Nashville in 1993. I went down to a it was on my birthday, actually, another birthday story. But I went to Douglas Corner with my wife, and they were doing a fundraiser there. We didn't have any money. I think it was a $5 admission, and that's about what we could afford for our birthday celebration. But we went in, and there were these writers that were unbelievable and great entertainers. I mean, in terms of they didn't get up and smoke machines and dance or anything like that, but they were just – their voices were great, and their performances were amazing. It knocked me out. And I went back home that night, and I wrote a long letter to a friend of mine, and he saved it and showed it to me the other day. And in that letter, I told him, I said, "I saw some guys – who are better, I saw some guys tonight who are better than I will ever be, and they will never have a hit."
Right.
That's a terrible thing to say, but the truth is, people, you have two decisions anytime you sit down to write a song. You're going to write it for you to play for yourself, or you're going to write it for other people to relate to as well. And I just enjoy listening to the radio. I grew up on radio, and I guess I enjoy writing songs that other people enjoy as well.
Right.
That doesn't make them great.
Right.
Well,
so,
thanks
the artists that are listening in, now what kind of encouragement, they're the ones especially giving up because they feel like their songs isn't good. I mean, can you give a word of encouragement? I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right.
Thanks a lot for the call, Bobby.
Thank you.
My word of encouragement to people out there is just keep doing it. Man, live. I go in every day and I write songs. I'm what I call a ham and egg songwriter. I go in and with my lunch pail and I sit down and write a song that day and I go home. It's a job, and I love my job, but that's what I do. And every day I go in, most days that I go in, I write a piece of junk. I mean, that's just true. But every now and then, something sneaks up and surprises me. I think the more I do it, the better I get at it. But inspiration, you got to be present to win. So I try to make sure that I'm there with a guitar and a pencil in my hand, just in case lightning should strike that day. And there have been many times that I've walked in not feeling like writing and wrote a hit.
Oh,
so
great.
Just keep on doing it. Don't quit.
Well,
just,
hopefully when we come back after this break, we'll hear some of that. We'll take care of that, your music being on a 50,000-watt station when we come back from the break. Hopefully we'll hear some some songs from Rivers Rutherford when we come back on the Music Row Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC.
Very nice. We are back on the Music Row Show with hit songwriter Rivers Rutherford.
That's Rivers in the background there singing Real Good Man. That's a song you might have heard. He's had a little bit of success with that, I think. Who's that guy that recorded that? I think I've heard of him once or twice.
Young kid out of Louisiana. Tim McGrath,
something like that.
Crime Dog.
It's Tim McGraw, baby.
Well, we were talking right before we went to the break about your night at Douglas Corner and how these guys were going to be better than you ever thought you could be, and they weren't going to have any hits. Can you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. These guys were... people make decisions. I was saying that before. People, you choose the kind of career you want to have and what's important to you. And there's a lot of people out there, you know, if you find yourself writing songs and they're not real commercial, but it's what you do, there's so many people who make a very good living doing their artistry, writing their songs and going out and performing them, and they don't enjoy huge commercial success and fame and all, but they make a darn good living doing it, mm-hmm. You know.
Great.
That's great.
That's a satisfying career.
That is satisfying. I would love to hear some music, and I think, hey, Tom, will you bring that mic just a little closer to the guitar?
There we go.
Take it down. We're going to have Rivers sing a song, and then we will be taking your calls at 737-WLAC.
Or 1-800-688-WLAC.
Or *WLAC on your Verizon Wireless. Make sure and call in. You're on the air for the next hour with Rivers Rutherford on the Music Row Show.
And that's right. So, Rivers, what are you going to grace us with tonight?
Oh, let's see. This is a song that was just number one 2 weeks ago. I wrote this with Dave Berg.
All right.
Rodney Atkins recorded. It's called These Are My People.
All right.
Well, we grew up down by the railroad track, shooting BBs at old beer cans, choking on the smoke of a Lucky Strike someone lifted off of his old man. We were football funkies, rock and roll junkies, cranking up the stereo, singing loud and proud to give me three steps in that old time of rock and roll. And we were good, you know. Yeah, we were. We got a discount knowledge at the junior college where we majored in beer and girls. And it was all real funny till we ran out of money and they threw us out into the world. And the kids just swore we'd run this town, ain't running much of anything. We're just living and laughing and busting our backs, and we call it all living a dream. These are my people, this is where I come from. We're giving this life everything we got and then some. It ain't always pretty, but it's real. And that's the way we were made, wouldn't have it any other way. These are my people. Well, we take it all week on the chin with the grin till we make it to a Friday night. Then it's church league softball, holler about a bad call, preacher breaking up the fight. And later on at the Green Light Tavern, man, everybody gathers his friends. And the beer's pouring till Monday morning when we start it all over again. And these are my people, this is where I come from. We're giving this life everything we got and then some. It ain't always pretty, but it's real. And that's the way we were made, wouldn't have it any other way. These are my people. And we fall down, but we get up. And we walk around, and we talk tough. And we got style, and we got nerve. A bit distant. Yeah, we're that too. These are my people. This is where I come from. We're giving this life everything we got and then some. It ain't always pretty, but it's real. And that's the way we were made. Wouldn't have it any other way. That's the way we were made, wouldn't have it any other way. But these are my people. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Well, thank you for that. That was awesome.
You wrote that with Dave Berg?
I did, yeah.
And he's coming on in October, right?
That's right. On October 7th, he's going to be here with us.
Retreat. That guy's great, I tell you.
Well, if you got any dirt on him, you can share with us right now.
Bring it.
We can,
I'll wait till he comes in and I'll call in.
All right. There we go.
Perfect.
You know, it's funny. That song actually made me think of something I heard somebody say one time about you and your music, and that's that it seems like a lot of your songs kind of are sung from the same perspective. The singer is kind of like this working class guy just trying to do right by the world, trying to figure his way in the world. Is that conscious? Are you intentionally doing that, or is it just come out that way?
You know, I don't know. I kind of come out that way, I guess. I grew up in Memphis. If you've ever been to Graceland Mansion, I grew up about 4 or 5 blocks from Graceland Mansion. It's kind of a tough neighborhood. And my grandfather was a trucker, and he and my dad started a trucking company about 1970. So I grew up around mechanics and truck drivers. And it's just who I am, I suppose.
All right. So you kind of write everything as if you're singing it then?
You know, I do. I find that I have more success with songs that I write as if I had a record deal and was making my own record, and which I do. I don't have a record deal, but I do make my own records. And when I write a song that I would record, I tend to have more success with those kind of songs than I do songs that I'm writing for particular artists, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, I try not to custom write stuff. If I do, I'm still writing from my heart.
Well, we were talking about that a little bit earlier on the break, that if you're intentionally trying to
chase
a hit,
yeah, I mean, that's very difficult to do. The first assignment write I had was The Highwaymen in 1988, and it worked. Yeah, I was very fortunate. But I had many assignment writes since then and hadn't had very much luck at all. So even the songs that Jeffrey Steele and I worked with Montgomery Gentry for a while there, did 2 or 3 records with them. And, of course, you know, you knew you'd get ready to go in the studio, and I'm writing songs. I'm trying to compete with everybody else in town. But when I wrote Custom for Eddie and Troy, as well as I knew them, it didn't work. They responded to the songs that I just wrote for me.
Okay. You know, I've been listening to your CD, Just Another Coaster, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to know how that name came up, but I really noticed, I'm a huge John Hiatt fan, and I noticed some similarities in your voice. Are you a listener of his music? And
yeah, I like John Hiatt. He's a very talented guy, great songs, you know, you wouldn't call him a classically great singer. He's just an amazing communicator. And that's really what I hope to be, just a communicator. You know, my pitch isn't always great. And obviously, I don't have the tone of a Mario Lanza.
Yeah.
But, but you know, maybe I've got the tone of a Gatemouth Brown. So I just I just hope that you believe what I'm singing.
I was hoping you'd break out into some O Solo Mio for us, but I guess not.
A little opera
be happening tonight
in honor of Luciano.
That's right. God rest his soul.
I'll tell you what a voice. Who do we have on the air online?
We have Julie out in Winchester. Julie, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, Julie.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Great. Hey, Julie.
Thank you. I'm one of the independent artists that the other gentleman, Bobby, was talking about, and thanks to Bobby, I do get heard. But my other question was, we know what Nashville's kind of looking for, especially in the female end, and it's the 4 B's, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, belly button, and the other.
What's the other?
I'm lost
here.
I'm just wondering.
I don't think we can say that on air.
Oh, we did 2 weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago. We're still writing emails about it.
But how does someone else that doesn't have the 4 B's get a song that they wrote heard without paying? Again, then it's another thing about the money, $500 to a famous song plugger or, you know, any other way to get a song that they've written. I've been to the millions of songwriters' showcases and seen the awesome songs, but where do they go?
Man, that's another great question, Julie. You know, I have 2 responses for you. Number one, what I did when I moved to Nashville was anytime anybody would let me bring my guitar into a bar and play it, I did it. So, and as you well know, there's a writer's night on every street corner here. So, and you go, and not everybody appeals to you, but I must have gone to 200 writer's nights the first couple of years that I lived here. And just watch people and look for the people that I enjoyed and felt like I might be able to write a song with, and I'd ask what they wanted to write. So some of those people were Tony Lane and David Lee.
Awesome.
Yeah, and Tony, great. David Lee and Roxy Dean, Jeffrey Steele was kind of, I mean, he was doing his Boy Howdy thing, but he was kind of new to town at the same time. And there's a Brett James, a bunch of us. And we just kind of came up the ranks together, as it were. As we, I would meet somebody and introduce Roxy Dean to that person that I'd met, and I'd go to a party, and Tony Lane would have met somebody in the industry, you know, on the A&R side of things, which was this big, all those guys seemed like they were behind this big dark veil, you know, that you couldn't penetrate. But they'd like to have a beer every now and then, too, and I'd meet one of them at a party, you know, and I'd make a contact. So it really is a relationship business. I tell people that Nashville is a 10-year town. If you've got talent is a prerequisite, but if you've got the talent and you keep your nose to the grind, it takes about 10 years.
Yeah.
The second thing I'd like to tell you is that I don't know if you're a member of Nashville Songwriters or not, but Nashville Songwriters Association International, which is nashvillesongwriters.com.
Yes, NSAI.
Right. That's a great organization. It's a great networking tool. They offer a lot of services for aspiring writers and hobby writers as well, you know. In terms of song critiques and networking opportunities. So that's another. And then the third one would be forging a relationship with somebody at one of the PROs. That being ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC.
Yes. That's
great.
Well, good question. Julie. Thanks, Julie.
All right, thank you.
We've got actually another caller out. We've got Joe in New Jersey. Joe, welcome to the Music
Roadshow. Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Scott, Hino, and Rivers?
Hey, Joe.
Great.
Enjoying the show. Rivers got a question for you. How often do you co-write versus writing by yourself, and which do you prefer?
Oh, man. When I first started writing songs, of course, everybody, I would imagine we all write by ourselves. Joe, do you write by yourself?
Well, I do mostly co-writing, but I do some by myself.
Yeah. Well, when I first started, it was entirely by myself. And, in fact, my first cut I wrote by myself. And I moved to Nashville, and I found that if I can write 15 songs by myself in a year, I can write about 120 when I co-write. It's not just twice as effective. It's 10 times as effective, you know. So I'd almost exclusively co-write now. When I do write by myself, I wind up getting bits and pieces of songs and bringing them in to the guy I'm writing with the next day. So I don't write as often by myself as I'd like to or as much as my publisher would like me to. But you know, songwriting is a lonely enterprise when you're doing it on your own. Paul McCartney said that, I think. And
if there's more ideas come when you write, co-write with other people.
It really is. But you have to remember, too, I think, to spend the time by yourself. And I do that. I mean, I'll when I'm kind of stymied or I'm writing and I just kind of feel like I'm in a rut, co-writing day after day after day, I start picking out a guitar I hadn't played in a while, or I also play a little bit of piano, and I'll sit down at the piano and start playing, and just to play, not to write, but just, invariably I wind up making up some kind of little instrumental or whatever, but it just kind of reminds me why I moved to town and what is it about music that I love, and almost always I wind up writing at least a piece of a song by myself that I can bring in, and it kind of gets me fired up again to write. So I think it's it's kind of a two sides of the same coin kind of thing. I try to write with other people as much as I can, but I like to write by myself as well. It's very helpful in both arenas.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you.
But that definitely is the way things go here in Nashville, isn't it? The whole co-writing thing definitely is unique, I think, to Nashville, it seems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know how unique to Nashville, all these pop songwriters, they're all writing stuff together, too. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal recently about Avril Lavigne, and I can't remember who the writers were, but one of them was very vocal about the fact that Avril's considered a singer-songwriter, and yet she didn't write a note of any of her songs, apparently.
Allegedly,
write a note. And just put her name on it, you know. So when there's three or four names on a song, they're bringing in some ringers and to write the song, you know, and they're co-writing a lot, too.
Does that happen in the country market at all?
No, I don't think so. No, it hadn't happened to me.
Okay.
I'm sure there's some instances where it has, but I've never seen it.
Cool. We got another caller. Actually, we just got time for a quick one. We got Jeff out in Tennessee.
Hey, Jeff. Try it again.
Jeff, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Hey, Rivers. How you doing?
Good, Jeff. How about you?
Hey, I'm Jeff, the pharmacist guy. You may remember from all those classes.
I do remember you, Jeff. How you doing, man?
I asked you this question one time about what your typical day or week was like, and you kind of started out, well, you know, you write from 10 to 2 every day, but then you kind of thought about it a while, and and it turned into like a 24-hour day, 7-day a week thing. Can you kind of talk about that and tell us what you do all week long, and I'll get off here and shut up. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for calling in, Jeff. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think being a songwriter is more of a calling than it is an occupation. There was a time, believe it or not, as I sit here with my long neck bottle in my hand, there was a time when I thought about going to seminary.
Really?
It really was, yeah.
Well, that would be a great place to pick up when we come back from our break. Hate to cut you off there, but that would be a great place to pick up. We'll come back after the break with Rivers Rutherford on the Music Row Show. Please call in at 737-WLAC, 1-800-688-WLAC.
Or star WLAC on your Verizon Wireless. We'll be back with former priest and lawyer Rivers Rutherford.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. We're here with Father Rivers Rutherford, Esquire.
let's get back to what you were saying there.
Well, first of all, I could never have gone to Catholic seminary because the celibacy thing I couldn't handle.
Understood.
This was a Presbyterian kind of arrangement. But, yeah, we were talking about songwriting being a calling. I remember I went and talked to the preacher at the church that I went to, and I said, you know, I'm thinking about seminary, and when he finally collected himself after falling over laughing, you know, he said, Rivers, and this is absolutely true, he said, Rivers, do everything in your power to avoid going to seminary, and if you can't avoid it, then that's God's call for you. And looking back, I think what he was saying basically was, you're not cut out for that, you know. But I took him at his word, you know, so it took me about a week to get that out of my system.
Okay.
But I took the same tack with music. I really did. I tried everything I could to avoid being in the music business. And literally, I remember the first year that I was married, my wife was finishing up a degree at the University of Mississippi, and I'd gotten my real estate license, trying to make a living out of that, and I looked back over the finances right before we decided to move to Nashville. I was looking back over the finances, and I realized I had made about $1,500 in real estate, and I made the rest of the money that we were living on playing in bars on the weekends. And I said, well, I guess I can play bars the rest of my life, or I can move to Nashville and see what I can do with writing some songs. So I couldn't make a living any other way, and I couldn't see any other option.
Mm-hmm. Well, will you play another song for us?
Yeah,
let's
absolutely
get that mic on. We are very excited to have Rivers Rutherford here, and I love this song.
I told you that my granddaddy had a trucking company, and we lost him about 4 years ago and buried him on a hilltop down in Memphis overlooking I-240, the loop there. He wanted to be buried on that hill looking over the interstate so he could watch the big rigs go by. I went back to Memphis shortly after he died and asked my daddy if he'd take me out to the cemetery to see where my granddaddy was buried there, the grave. I was named for my grandfather, Rivers Rutherford. So we drove up into the cemetery and made our way back through those tall Memphis oak trees and found the headstone there, and I looked down and it was my name on a grave marker.
Ooh.
I get where I'm going on the far side of the sky. The first thing that I'm gonna do is spread my wings and fly. I'm gonna land beside a lion and run my fingers through his mane, or I might find out what it's like to ride a drop of rain. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. And I will shed the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. And now leave my heart wide open. I will love
and have no fear. Man, when I get where I'm going, don't cry for me down. Gonna walk with my granddad. He'll match me step for step. And I'll tell him how we've missed him every minute since he left. Then I'll hug his neck. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. I will share the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. Now leave my heart wide open. I will love and have no fear. Man, when I get where I'm going, don't cry for me down here. So much pain and so much darkness. In this world we stumble through, questions I can't answer, so much work to do. But when I get where I'm going, and I see my Savior's face, I'll live forever in the light of His amazing grace. When I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
That truly, truly falls under the category of a song I wish that I had written. That is just amazing.
I'm just happy to sit and hear that one.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have time?
We're about to go to a break here, so we'll just leave it at that, and we'll come back in a few minutes. But please do give us a call at 737-WLAC.
1-800-6-something-something-WLAC.
688-WLAC or star WLAC on your Verizon Wireless. This is the Music Row Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC.
Does it? She's scared of being plain. Arms are always open.
Oh, that's nice.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. We're here with Rivers Rutherford. That's a song in the background there called The One That Got Away, that great artist by the name of Cole Daggs.
That's right.
Put on his album.
We love Cole.
I love that song.
Awesome. We love Cole. Hey, let's talk a bit. I know you're going to be playing at the Bluebird on the 28th.
28th, Friday night, yeah.
And that's a fundraiser for what?
For the NSA, it's a legislative fundraiser for the National Songwriters Association. We do some lobbying work in Washington, protecting the copyright interests of songwriters everywhere, and this will help fund some of that.
Excellent. Well, and I was going to ask you, I've seen some pictures of you on Capitol Hill playing music for Congress and trying to raise awareness of the harm downloading does to songwriters. Where are we at with that? What are the challenges that still need to be overcome that you see?
You know, as far as I can tell, I mean, there's still some huge challenges out there. We're making great gains and great headway, but the biggest issue is just educating the legislators. If we can sit down with each one of them, which we've done several times. In fact, I think NSAI holds the record for the most one-on-one congressional visits of any lobbying organization on the planet.
Really?
That includes NARAL, the NRA, all the biggies, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, when you're a songwriter and you show up on Capitol Hill with a guitar, most of them will let you in.
They notice,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's just educating them to the issues. Even one of our own senators here, Bob Corker, who's been a great ally to us and really does get the issues and understands it. But he'll tell you. It's you know, he sat through hearings on some, I don't know if it's biomedical issues or nuclear physics, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He said, that understood. How you get paid, I don't get it.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's really some complicated issues. And when we do sit down with the legislators in Washington and explain them to them, they get it. because the truth is really the right thing to do is it's our position, which is pay us.
Yeah,
pay
that's
for
all.
Music.
Sure.
You know,
that's all.
Sure.
We have a quick one here.
We do. We have a quick one. We've got Heidi out in Spring Hill. Heidi, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Rivers.
Hi, Heidi. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing very well, thank you.
Great. Well, I have two comments. I love that song you just did.
Thank
when
you.
When I get
nice.
Where I'm going, and it was great to hear you sing it. And I saw you at an event for JDRF. It was a golf tournament, and you have beautiful hair.
Oh. Well, thank you very much.
And I was just wondering, do you have any songwriting workshops coming up that you're teaching?
You know, at the moment, no. I don't, but I used to do a little class at Vanderbilt, a continuing education class, which I hadn't done in the past couple of years, and I may do I may speak at one of the song camps that NSAI does coming up soon, but no full on workshops. I'm sorry.
Oh no, that's okay. Well, I know Scott and Heino will keep us posted.
Good.
Absolutely, better believe it.
Thanks, Heidi.
You're welcome. Bye.
Well, Rivers, why don't you tell us how, if people want to hear more of your music, where do they go other than just turn on the radio? But if they want to hear you performing it,
you know,
your website?
Yeah, my website is www.riversrutherford.com, or you can find me at MySpace/RiversRutherford.
Okay.
If that's MySpace.com/RiversRutherford.
Right, yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
Great.
There it is. Excellent. Do we have time for another question?
We do. Actually, you were telling us a little bit about the Van Zandt song. I guess there's a good story behind that one.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't guess we have time to play it, but we had a song that I wrote called That Scares Me. I wrote it with who did I write the darn song with? George Tarrin and gosh, dog.
I'm sorry.
This is nuts.
I want to help you.
Yeah.
Well,
the guy with the guitar.
The other guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Great guy, too, dead gumming. He's going to shoot me when I see him next week. And rightfully so. But my daughter had asked me about the question that all dads fear. You know, she says, so, Dad, have you ever – we're in a drugstore. And she said, what's a drug testing kit? And I told her, and she said, why would you want one? And I explained to her why you'd want one. And she said, well, Dad, did your parents ever need to get one for you? And in other words, did you ever smoke
right.
pot was the question.
Right.
And, oh, man, that was a tough question to answer. But I said, you know what I did? It's a bad idea, and this is why. And it hit me after I explained it to her. You know, she said, well, you think you'll ever smoke it again? I said, I'll make you a deal. I'll never smoke it again if you never smoke it at all. So we got our arrangement going. But then it hit me. I thought, okay, that's over with and done. I got three more kids coming up.
Right.
You know, and that scared the crap out of me thinking about all that. So we wrote That Scares Me.
That Scares Me.
I'm going to have to pull it. We'll play it next week in the first hour. How's that?
That'd be great. That'd
yeah.
be great.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I guess to wrap
Thank
it up,
you.
I mean, is there anything, just looking back on your career, that you might have done differently advice-wise for people coming up right now?
Oh, man, I wrote a song once that said, if I could do it all again, I'd look more in the mirror.
Mm.
And I'd do a lot more praying, a lot less cussing about the things that I can't change. I'd laugh a little louder, sing more in the shower, care a little less if I'm in tune. And if I could do it all again, I'd take it a little slower, make a few more memories I could keep, crawl in bed beside my wife, just lay there and watch her, soaking up her beauty while she sleeps.
I like that. I like that. You got to write that down.
I will.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Just off the top of my head here.
Speaking of writing it down, I understand that you are an author now. You have a book out.
We do, yes.
I just saw advertised on Amazon.com.
That's
Tell us
right.
about that.
We George Tarrin and I, my co-writer on When I Get Where I'm Going, we're good friends with Gretchen Wilson. We've written with her quite a bit, and we went on the road with her last spring, actually, 18 months ago, and wrote songs with her in the afternoon, and while she did her show, we'd sit on the bus and write our book.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we wrote this book. It's a reflections on death and dying and the afterlife and what heaven is like. And in my mind, it's a really nice gesture. It's a glorified sympathy card.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very proud of the book, and it's available at Amazon.com.
Is it based on the song?
It is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, that song's really taken on a life of its own.
Really?
I mean, you know, it's just one of those, and I don't need to tell you this, but, you know, it's such a comfort, and you know, it's just beautiful.
Well, thank you.
And another one of your beautiful ones. I love it. So that's it. We'll be back next week. Who do we have? We have a Kurt Webster.
That's right. We got Kurt Webster.
And Tom Shepard.
Tom Shepard next week, who are going to grace us with their presence. We'll hear all about the publicity side of things from Kurt and more songwriting tips, I guess.
Jewels.
Jewels, nuggets from...
Ashley Gorley. George Tarrant and Ashley Gorley and I wrote That Scares Me.
Remembered
there we go. Remembered it. That's awesome.
In there, baby.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Until next week, please send us an email at mail@themusicrowshow.com with any questions or comments. We look forward to seeing you next week on News Radio 1510 WLAC.
Oh, man.